Well, then it's Resurrection Day. That which the disciples had been told about but hadn't taken in has happened. They were surprised by what they'd been led to expect to happen, but isn't that life? And so in the morning, the women who rushed to the tomb, the disciples who rushed to the tomb, have discovered that the tomb was empty and Jesus has appeared to them. Now, he's appeared to the disciples. He's appeared to the 12 and to that group around them who were the sort of regular, constant followers of Jesus. Not the 12, the 11. By then. Just threw that out in case any of you were listening. The one who was missing was Judas, of course. Now, something happened in the evening then, which began to spread the whole thing. And this is what we read of as two people were going back to the village called Emmaus. Now that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. They were talking with each other about everything that had happened. As they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked along with them. But they were kept from recognizing him. He asked them, "What are you discussing together as you walk along?" They stood still, with their faces downcast. One of them, named Cleopas, asked him, "Are you the only one visiting Jerusalem who does not know the things that have happened there in these days?" "What things?" he asked. "About Jesus of Nazareth," they replied. "He was a prophet, powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. The chief priests and our rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. And what is more, it is the third day since all this took place. In addition, some of our women amazed us. They went to the tomb early this morning but didn't find his body. They came and told us that they had seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. Then some of our companions went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but they did not see Jesus." He said to them, "How foolish you are, and how slow to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Did not the Messiah have to suffer these things and then enter his glory?" And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself. As they approached the village to which they were going, Jesus continued as if he was going, as if he were going on further. But they urged him strongly, "Stay with us, for it is nearly evening, the day is almost over." So he went to stay with them. When he was at the table with them, he took bread, gave thanks, broke it, and began to give it to them. Their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he disappeared from their sight. They asked each other, "Were not our hearts burning within us while he talked with us on the road and opened the scriptures to us?" They got up and returned at once to Jerusalem. There they found the 11 and those with them assembled together and saying, "It is true, the Lord has risen and has appeared to Simon." Well, from death to life. When we were reading there, you may have noticed in the paragraph that begins at verse 25 there, just three up from the bottom of the page, the main page, Jesus said to them, "How foolish you are and how slow to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Did not the Messiah," which is the person that they all, many of them figured, yes, he is the Messiah. We realize now he's the Messiah. And they believed in Jesus. They weren't rejecting him as the Messiah, as most of the Jews were, and certainly the Jewish authorities were doing. They'd accepted him. So they said, yes, he's the Messiah. So Jesus said, "Did not the Messiah have to suffer?" You know, these things which which seem to be saying it's all gone horribly wrong. These things that have happened to Jesus, which make it look as if, you know, the whole enterprise has been a great failure and everybody got it wrong all the time and how stupid we all were. Did not the Messiah have to suffer these things? These things being what they had been speaking about that had gone on in Jerusalem during the last 3 days, about Jesus of Nazareth, that he was handed over to be sentenced to death and crucified 3 days ago. Did not the Messiah have to suffer these things? Didn't he have to be handed over? Didn't he have to be tried? Didn't he have to be crucified? Didn't he have to die and be buried and then enter his glory? Now, just a little bit of background there. On 4 occasions, in the sort of the latter part of Jesus' ministry, he had told the disciples, then 12 of them, that he had to do these things. So the disciples and the crowd around, that is, the 12, hadn't got it. And Cleopas and his friend hadn't got it either. So Jesus is having to say it again now, after the resurrection, when you might have thought the penny would have dropped. But he has to say it again to Cleopas and his friend. Did not the Messiah have to suffer these things and then enter his glory? And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, going right back to the first 5 books of the Old Testament, that's what Moses means, and all the prophets, that's beginning with them, he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures. So you got the Psalms and everything else in the Old Testament concerning himself. So, for Jesus, his whole life was a matter of, well, starting in heaven, so starting with life, but then descending to death, into the grave, descending into hell for us, and then to life again. Now that movement, life to death to life, that swing, if you like, great swing of the pendulum, that was Jesus' career. That was Jesus' flow of life, his CV. Why? Why did Jesus say, did not the Messiah have to suffer these things? Why did he have to do that? Why did he have to go from life to death to life? Why couldn't the Messiah just say, okay, everybody's forgiven, you're all okay, off we go back to heaven. You know, let bygones be bygones. You know, put it all behind you, off we go. Why did he have to do that? Well, at this point, it's helpful to think of Air Sea Rescue, which you might not have been doing up until now when I mentioned it, but anyway, big yellow helicopters, all the rest of it. Where I grew up in Yorkshire, the east coast of Yorkshire was serviced by RAF Leconfield. I used to spend holidays on the coast in the east coast of Yorkshire there, which was just a peculiar and wonderful blessing for a child. And they used to come over, and regularly you'd either see them doing exercises or you knew it was for real, off the coast, off Filey, Bridlington, Scarborough, those places. And what you would always see, the helicopter hovering over there, and everyone in the helicopter was safe. And it looked fine and spectacular. And you thought, wow, that'd be great fun to fly one of those. You thought that when you're about 7 or 8 years old, and you'd still think that when you're 54, apparently. They looked fantastic. And then, lo and behold, of course, a guy would come out of the thing. You think, well, that's a bit dodgy. And he'd go all the way down, and you'd see him into the water. And the next thing you would see, because it all looked like, you know, what's happening here? They've just let somebody down into the water. He was safe. Now he isn't. You know, he was alive and he's going down into the watery deep. What's going on? And then he would come up again with somebody else fastened to him. And the somebody else, you didn't realize, had been in the water all the time. And up they go. I saw that happen a few times. Up they go. And the guy who was as good as dead was raised to life by the guy who came from the place where he was safe into the deathly watery deep and back again. Now that's that movement from the helicopter down into the water, grab hold of the guy who's drowning, strap him on so he's safe, and he doesn't even have to depend upon his own strength because that's gone. He was drowning. And then back up, winched back up to safety. That is exactly the movement of Jesus from heaven, life, to this place of sin, death, the cross, the tomb, and then raised on the third day and ascended back, as he says, to enter his glory. See, Jesus had to do that because we are the people in the watery deep. We're the people who are drowning. We're the people who don't have the strength to climb to the helicopter. We're the people who need a rescuer. We're the people who need somebody who really knows what life is to come and enter this place of ours and take us and fasten us safely and take us to heaven. See, the Messiah did not have to suffer these things just like for, you know, an example or something. And what kind of example would that be anyway? And what good would that do? He didn't have to suffer these things just for, you know, like his own sake or something. He had to do this for you and for me. He had to be handed over and sentenced to death and crucified. Because we were under sentence of death. See, we have sinned. We are, in spiritual terms, we're drowning. And we don't have the strength to save ourselves. We're going under. So he had to come and do for us what we could not do for ourselves. And bear our death. And then be raised from the dead. So that we, too, might live. So you see, Jesus went from death to life, from life to death to life. And he had to do that so that when we put our faith in him, when we trust him and not ourselves, when we receive his rescue and don't push him away like some people do in the water out of panic, then we too can go from death to life. So he came down, took us to himself, and ascended so that we might live. From death to life. So as we were saying in prayer, the thing about from death to life isn't simply, hey, here's a way to live forever. You know, here's like the ultimate anti-aging treatment. Here's the ultimate, you know, that all the cryogenics and everything else is going for. Here's the ultimate, you know, sort of health trip. It isn't about just living forever and ever. It's about being delivered from our sin. About being delivered from its power over us. About being delivered from its grip on us. It's about being delivered from its penalty. It's about being rescued from the consequences of what we have done. It's about being made alive with God again. About being taken from not just, you know, the ordinary processes of dying, but about being taken from death, which is eternal separation from God, and brought to life, which is eternal fellowship with God, eternally being with God. That's what Easter is about. And when Cleopas and his friend had heard that, and then saw maybe in his hands the nail prints as he broke the bread, and heard something that belonged to that Passover meal, the Last Supper. Isn't it amazing the way that Luke writes it? Verse 30, when he was at the table with them, he took bread, gave thanks, broke it, and began to... They were having communion. Then their eyes were opened, and then they saw. Our Savior is alive. And because he was alive, all who follow him will live also. Well, that's what Easter's about. Longer lasting than the eggs that are half price already. Longer lasting than the lambs that one day ere long will end up on our plates. Longer lasting than the flowers, the daffodils, which come autumn time will be a distant memory. Let's pray.